on principled uncertainty. Well, this started out the way it really should in my creative process, which was I didn't know how to spell principle. Because, as you know, there are two ways, and one of them was the vice principal, and that was Pal, and then there's the other one, and I wasn't sure which one I'm dealing with, but I think that uncertainty is my friend. It's written, the doubt is the handmaiden of truth. And certainty almost always leads to a kind of arrogance and a dismissal of people who are different. Most of the bad things that happen in the world are not done by people who are lacking in certainty. They are going right ahead with what they absolutely know to be right and to hell with everybody else. And I'm not so certain that certainty is a good idea. I like my doubt. I like principled uncertainty. I think that a lot of Western modern philosophy starts with Descartes and his idea of doubting everything, going back to first principles and eliminating anything that might have been just assumed and building and rebuilding from his own thought experiment. That there are philosophical problems in that methodology is another conversation, possibly for after the sermon. But the idea that everything is doubtable seems to me to be important. Most of you know that I have this motto, it's almost becomes for me a cliche, that life is an incomplete information problem. And that comes from detective stories and mysteries, that people are given incomplete information to solve a problem, to solve a crime. There's a piece missing. There's something missing from the puzzle. And yet we still have to try to find order. We have to try to create order. We have to try to understand things, knowing that we don't have all of the information, and therefore our conclusions are not 100% certifiable. We may be 100% certifiable, but our conclusions, not so much. And I think that that's wonderful. I think that if we had tremendous, rock-hard certainty about everything, we would turn to powder. It is those trees that do not bend, those people who do not question, who, when something is removed or challenged, either respond in anger or in fear or just crumble because their system crumbles with their assumptions. One of the things about Unitarian Universalism is we don't have all the answers, but we have the right to ask the questions, to explore, to come up with tentative answers, to build houses sometimes of cards, but part of the creative process is letting those houses be blown down by change and to have the great good fortune of rebuilding those houses and being creators and co-creators of a process of understanding and of life. Baba Ram Das once was asked if how those Indians could possibly, East Indian Indians, could worship a god or goddess of destruction. And his answer really was that without destruction, there's no creation. That we are involved in cycles of understanding, of questioning, of destroying, and of rebuilding. And that keeps us alive and engaged in the process. It keeps our minds sharp, and it should keep our hearts at least a little bit humble. Now, the principle of uncertainty that I quote in the title is from the physicist Heisenberg, who, and there are two parts to his ideas of uncertainty. One is that you can't know where any one thing is going to go. If you release a gas into a vacuum, you know that it's going to disperse in a certain pattern, but you don't know where any individual molecule or atom will be. So that you can predict the mass, but you can't predict the particular. The second part of the principle of uncertainty by Heisenberg is the idea that you can know where you are and you can know where you're going, but not at the same time. Now that seems really frustrating, you know. I know where I am, but I don't know where I'm going. I know where I'm going, but I don't know where I'm located. But when you think about that, it's true. When you're going someplace, you're in movement, and so you don't know where you are from moment to moment. When you're not in movement, you know where you are, but you have infinite possibilities. Since a point is infinite, the directions that you can go are infinite. Well, they're both important. We need to know where we are, where we start, and we need to be able to choose where we're going and the possibilities of what we're going to do if we're not on automatic pilot are pretty much almost infinite. And that's where some more uncertainty comes in. Where do I want to go? Whose journey am I on? What am I doing? And am I just going in a direction because I have been pushed by society, by parents, by a fashion industry, by whatever is going on in the world? Or am I going in some direction that is congruent with what I believe, with what I value, that it is an active choice? Where am I starting from? It's important. It's an important question. It's the first question that gets asked in the Bible. And it's an interesting question in the Bible. Right in Genesis, Adam and Eve eat the fruit, and all of a sudden find themselves naked and Bloomingdale's is closed and they have no idea what to do and they hide out in the bushes and God says, "Where are you?" And the rabbis understood immediately that that wasn't God's lack of information, because if there are only two naked people in the world and God can't find them, there's a tracking problem here. So that the question had to be aimed at human beings asking, "Where are you? What are you doing? You had a nice deal here. What were you thinking?" Adam's answer should have been, "I thought an apple was a nutritional high-fiber snack. What did I know?" Instead, he gave a really bad answer, which was, "The woman made me do it." Anyway, actually, it was even worse. He said, "The woman you gave me made me do it." That's kind of the double. It's her fault, but really, it's your fault. But the question is the human question. Where am I? And that's the place where you start a personal inventory about where we are as individuals, how we are leading our lives as individuals, and then where are we going? Where do we want to go? What path do we want to choose that's congruent with these examined values that we took the time when we were sitting still to look inside and think about? What is it that I find valuable? What is it that the root word of worship is worth-ship, is what is it in my life that I can hold up to be of worth? What is it in my life that I can create or reveal, that I can chisel out of stone or form out of chaos that is worthy of my attention and of your attention? This is the examined life that leads to a path that's congruent with our values. Now, our values, we don't know the ultimate answer. We don't know how that's going to work out. So what do? There's a play that I saw many years ago, and I laughed so hard during the course of this play that I put myself into an asthma attack, and I may have missed a little bit of it because I was howling and yelling and gasping for breath. And it's a play called by Durning called The Actor's Nightmare. And The Actor's Nightmare is this guy shows up at the theater, and the stage manager says, "It's so good to see you. Oh, my God, the star isn't here. You're going on. But I don't know the play. I don't know what's going on, and I don't even know who you are. Don't worry about it. You're going on. And he's pushed out onto the stage, and it's No Cowards, Private Lives, you know? And it's very sophisticated, and it's very brittle repartee, and you will forgive my terrible version of your accent. And he has no idea what to do, and he's just wandering around trying to pick up the story. And then just when he starts to get it, and he actually starts to do a presentable English accent, better than Kevin Costner's in Robin Hood, which is a low bar. Just when he starts to get it, the curtain comes down and up immediately, and all of a sudden, he's in Waiting for Godot. And he's got to figure out what in the world is going on in this absurdist play. And he has no idea. And just when he starts to get it, and he climbs into the trash can, and he's talking to Estragon, and as soon as he starts to get it, the curtain comes down really fast and comes up, and it's Man for All Seasons. And he's about to be executed, and he has no idea why. And I'm howling, and then I'm thinking, how much of this is the human nightmare? We're pushed out onto a stage, and we don't know what the play is. Is it a comedy? Is it a tragedy? It depends on our age, depends on our society, depends on what's going on in the world. What are our lines? How are we supposed to act? I've had my, and it changes. It changes from comedy to tragedy and back to comedy again. As the world changes, as we move from a birth to a death, to all of the cycles that we go through, all of the rooms that we go through, and we're trying to figure out madly as we go along, what's the right key? What's the right pitch? What are the right words? How do I feel? What do I do in a world that can be so overwhelming? What do I do now? My own version of this, and this is an absolutely true story, is that I have had the recurring version of the actor's nightmare for most of my life. And in my case, it's not those three plays. In my case, the truth is, the first time it happened, I showed up and the guy said, "You're on." And I said, "What?" And he said, "Death of a Salesman, you're Biff." And I said, "But I don't know the lines." And the director always said the same thing. Said, "Do you know the character?" And I say, "Well, of course." And the director said, "If you know the character, in every situation, you will speak the right lines. They're the only lines possible." Now, a philosopher inside me thinks that that's true. A human inside me thinks, "Are you out of your mind?" But it should be true. As time has gone on, I no longer have that exact dream. It's now Willie, not Biff. And it hurts me that I'm actually too old for Willie. Unless Linda is a second marriage, but that's a whole other story. But it's the same dream. It's the same dream. If you know the character, you're going to react appropriately in every scene. Now, that doesn't work for me in terms of actually knowing the lines. It does mostly work for me in terms of what to do. If I know my values, even if I fail to live up to them from time to time, as everyone does, but if I know what I value, if I know what my principles are, I may be uncertain of the outcome. I should be uncertain of the outcome, but I know pretty much how to act in almost any situation. And I don't mean act in terms of phony act. I mean act in terms of how to be in the world. A life of examined values that we attempt to make congruent to our situations does not lead inevitably to triumph, does not lead inevitably to choosing the right thing, but it does lead to choosing the authentic thing which gives us the best chance of authenticity. of some sense of humility because we are making the choice according to our best sense of our values. Our lives are still incomplete information problems. We don't know how every value and every action and every policy is going to play out in the world. The road to hell is indeed paved with a lot of good intentions, but we give ourselves a chance with humility, with information, with introspection, and with knowledge. We are pushed out onto a stage of life, and sometimes it's tragedy, and sometimes it's farce, and we often can't tell for the first 15 minutes. And during that time, what we have to know is who we are as we figure out what's going on, and then we choose. It becomes not God's, not the state's, not the church's, not the preacher's, not anybody else's responsibility, but our responsibility to choose an examined path in a wandering world where the scenery changes, the mood changes, the weather changes, and we change according to what's going on, but with examined core values and principles that give us a chance of being effective and leading meaningful and important lives in our world with each other.